Magic.
And the world of illusion.
Magic TV.
And Craig Petty. Proudly present the Talk Magic Podcast. Every week we bring you awesome interviews with the greatest magicians that have ever lived. And now, here's your host, Craig Petty.
It's 9 o'clock, which means it's time for a Talk Magic. And I am here with, I've used this term before on the channel, but it definitely applies to this guy. The best kept secret in magic. Now, you know, it's true. You know this person from being very much the face of Alakazam. He's the face that runs the place. He's the guy that makes sure that everybody gets what they want, and he's so knowledgeable. But outside of that, you're an incredible magician. I've sat there in Alakazam and watched this man do stuff that I could only dream of with a deck of cards and coins. Like, he is phenomenal, and I'm so happy that he's found time to come on the channel. I am, of course, talking about Mr. Alakazam himself, the one and only Andy Smith. How you doing, Andy?
I'm very well, thank you. Yeah, I'm very, very good. Thank you so much for having me on. And that was amazing. I'm blushing.
And it's true. Like, I remember when I went to Alakazam to do my Coin Magic Academy, the first one, and you and I were in the shop, and the shop had pretty much closed, and I was waiting to do the academy, and I was there jamming and doing some stuff with you, and you were showing me some of your coin stuff. And I was just thinking to myself, why the hell has Peter got me doing this? Like, you've got this beast here who's just like crushing it with coins. Why do I need to travel 8-hour round trip to do this academy when he could probably run it himself with his eyes closed? Like, this is incredible technique. Like, so, and I was speaking to Peter as well today, actually, and he said the same thing. He said, Andy's the best kept secret in magic. He told me a story about he'd known you for years, obviously, in the shop, yeah, but he'd never seen you work for lay people.
Right.
He said the first time he saw Andy work for lay people, he was just like blown away. It was like a completely different person. And that's Peter, who knows everything about magic. So, you know.
Oh, that I was worried then when you said that Peter had told me a story because I was wondering whether any of the Alakazam Christmas parties were going to come up. It's like, that's, I was just getting ready to, I've got a whole list of like denials and all sorts of things here that I had prepared for that. Oh, bless him. That's very kind of him to say that. But, you know, we have known each other for quite a few years, you know, outside of work as well. I was trying to recall actually how long I've known Peter. And I think the first time I met him was my late 20s. So, you know, I've known him a fair amount of years. But, you know, crazily, I used to go in the shop with friends when Peter was running the shop out of his garage at home, and go in there and see him, and we talk magic, and I'd buy stuff, obviously. But I don't think he didn't really see me do any magic. You know, the demon in the shop is different seeing, obviously, performing out live. It was very kind of him to say that. And to be very complimentary.
Well, you know, he knows his thing. He knows a thing or two, does Peter?
But he does. Yeah.
Before, every time I speak to him, he's so complimentary about you, and you know, Alakazam wouldn't be Alakazam without Andy. So you know, although you know, I'm on a campaign this year, I have to be honest, of making sure you get your Christmas bonus, my friend. Every year, he screws you every year.
Every year, I have to go through this trial of trying to get my Christmas bonus. One year I will get my payback, you know, I will get my payback. I keep threatening that actually I'll go through the $1 billion Bunko book behind me here and just get whatever Simon Lovell's written in there, you know, and then we'll turn the tables as if it works. Yeah, but you know, the thing is that I'm sure that it wouldn't work with Peter. You know, that's the thing. Every year without fail. So.
Well, let's...
Well, he's already. I know he's already planning this year, and I'm dreading it. I really am. You know, you guys out there are going to love it, but I'm going to seriously be dreading it this year, because I've only heard hints. So there we go.
Oh dear. Well, yeah. I can't wait to see it. I'm an avid watcher of the Alakazam, and I love it when you know, we're deviating from this, but you know, you've started doing some videos on the Alakazam YouTube channel about books that you really enjoy watching and reading, and I've really enjoyed watching those videos. You know,
thank you.
Because it just shows how knowledgeable you are. I mean, you can tell from the library behind you, you're so well read, you're so knowledgeable, you know so much about magic, and it's lovely watching those videos and seeing that all shine through.
Oh, bless you. Thank you very much. I'll be the first to admit I'm not the best on video. I do shy away from being on video if I have the opportunity, which is a shame, I guess, because when I'm there, I guess it really depends on what the environment is. When I'm with people that are like yourself here this evening, or if I'm on the vlogs that I've done in the past with Harry, or if I'm on camera with Peter or anybody else, I seem to be fine. But put in front of a camera, just on my own, the nerves do set in. Even though I've been performing magic for such a long time, I think it's a really strange sort of thing. You can go into an audience of complete strangers at a gig, at a wedding, and you're there, you're in, you're off. But as soon as you're in front of, or as soon as I'm in front of a camera, then immediately I'm like, what do I do? What do I say? How am I going to plan this? The Ready Steady Reads were actually quite a good catalyst in a lot of ways, because it forced me to look at the way that I would film it. And I guess I got myself in the mindset that I had to do it within a certain amount of time. I had to do the video all the way through with no breaks and get everything out in a set amount of time. Whereas the truth of the matter is that I could spend as much time as I needed doing it, as many times as I needed doing it, until I was comfortable with it. And then I would send it off to Peter, and then obviously Peter would edit it and add the visual elements in, like the opening credits and stuff. So actually I could do it on my own terms. So it was good. It's just a shame that, personally, I've not had the time this last 18 months or so to do very many more. I did one a few months back, which was good, to try and get back in the swing of things. But in that time, I have been reading other books that I wanted to review that I hadn't actually got round to reading. So, and books that were different to what I previously reviewed, and wholly different as well, you know, books that were a different subject matter. So the plan is that they will eventually be the Ready Steady Reads moving forward, because it's kind of invigorating with a bit of a different life, so to speak.
Well, let's, for the people that don't know who you are, maybe they've never heard of Alakazam, God knows how or why.
That's unthinkable.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Let's start at the very beginning.
Yeah.
Obviously, you said you met Pete in your late 20s. Yeah. When did you get into magic, Andy? What was your origin story? When did the bug bite?
So my parents brought me a magic set, as lots of parents do, when I was around about 7-8 years old. It was Paul Daniels' magic set, because at the time they were the magic sets. And at the time, I played with the stuff that was in there a little bit, and then that went by the wayside. You know, I'm one of five boys. I'm the eldest of five boys. My brothers are all sports orientated. And I guess at the time I just kind of thought, well, not really for me. Not that I went into sports, but, you know, I also quite like, you know, art, drawing, those sort of things at the time. So my interest diverted in another direction. And then a couple of years later, I had to go for an appointment, a doctor's appointment, I think it was. And when we were in town, my mum said to me, she said, what do you want for your birthday? And we were walking past Athena in Maidstone. Do you remember Athena, the poster and bookshop?
Posters and everything,
yeah. There's some quite famous posters as well that used to be hanging up in the inside, you know, just out of view. And she said, what do you want for your birthday? And in the window was a book. It was called The Illustrated Book of Magic by Edwin Dawes and Arthur Setterington. And I was like, I want that. And she kind of looked at me. I remember the kind of look that mothers do when they're thinking, that is the weirdest choice because you've never, ever given me any indication that that would be something that you would want. And she did. She bought it for me for as one of the birthday presents. And I read for it. I read it from cover to cover and absolutely loved it. And I had some birthday money left over. And in one of the what was then discount bookstores that had opened up recently, they had a copy of the Mark Wilson Course in Magic. So the hardback one, the one that had the top hat on the front with the balls floating on the front of it. Yeah. So I brought that and I read through that, and that became my working repertoire. Working repertoire in the sense that that was what I would perform for family. I would go through it, there were bits in there, the card magic bits, and just everything. I was quite enamoured at that age with the cups and balls. I thought that was a brilliant effect, so I learned how to do that. And then from there, it just kind of went on. A friend of, well, actually my best friend, he'd gone away on holiday, and on one of the places or the places that they went, there was a magician there who lived locally. So he picked up his flyer, and then the gentleman had said to him, give this to your friend and he can get in contact. We have a magic club over in Rochester, so not very far away. And then by the time we got to this sort of stage, I was turning 16. So yeah, 16, 17 years old. So I was eligible to go over to their junior group. And then it kind of then went from there, as many people do. You join a magic club and then you meet other magicians. It kind of stems out from there. So very traditional, I think, in the way that I kind of approached it. That's kind of how it went.
Did you have any aspirations at that age of being a gigging magician?
No.
Anything that you wanted to do or no?
No. I wanted to be a teacher. I wanted to teach junior school. That was my aspiration. I think there was two aspirations at that point, was to be a teacher, either English, because I love English, or art. They were my two kind of avenues that I was thinking would be plausible. Disappointingly, in some respects, I didn't make much of an effort. I think I got to my senior school years and it was kind of like, we go through, I did business studies. I stayed on for sixth form. I did an A-level in English. I did, kind of the run up to doing things that I was maybe aspiring to. And then it just kind of halted, a lot of my friends, to be perfectly honest, were going off and just getting jobs that were fairly standard, normal, working in retail, working in an office, not necessarily, things where you would have to have good grades, but that's what a lot of them were doing. And there were a few that went on and did other things, and learned crafts, learned professions. So I kind of slipped into the retail environment, and that's where I stayed. I didn't move from retail. I kind of diverted a few times. I worked in optics for quite a while. I worked in optics. I worked for Specsavers for a few years. I trained up to work in the lab for Specsavers. I moved over to Boots, worked in the lab there for a few years, and actually left Boots to start working for Peter. And I was with him for a couple of years, and then I met my wife, and we were looking at moving forward, what would be the plan from there. So I left there and went into other retail environments, and then eventually ended up back at Alakazam.
Well, let's just rewind a little bit. So
yeah.
Because I want to ask you a few questions about that. So yeah. I know you as a gigging magician. Obviously, you work at Alakazam, but you do gigs as well.
Yeah.
My first question is, when did you start doing gigs? Was it before you started working at Alakazam the first time? Or was it being around Alakazam that kind of pushed you towards becoming a gigging magician?
No, I was doing gigs before I worked at Alakazam the first time. At the Medway Club, which I became a member of, there were a few professional magicians there that started passing out work to me. Most notably, Nigel Mead was one of the first ones. Nigel had some residencies at different places, one of which was, well, he had TGIs, a number of TGI stores, and a couple other residencies that were dotted about the county. So occasionally I would go and do work for him there. So that was my first segue into that. And then a couple other people that were professional magicians would pass over work. A few of the magicians would take me on gigs with them. So one of the members was a gentleman called John Hill, who ended up being the stage manager at Magic Circle for a number of years. And John was kind of the leader of the junior group, so to speak. So he would be responsible for the junior group. And there was a number of occasions where I would go to gigs with him. There would be no payment on it, apart from, you know, I would get lunch and I'd get looked after during the day. But I got to work, to watch him working, doing shows, mainly kids' shows, but I got to see him working. And then after a time, what he would do is he would then give me a spot in his show, you know, 5 minutes, just one effect. And then that would be it. But I would help out with stuff. I would, you know, walk on with props or hand props over and things like that. A couple of other magicians used to do the same thing. I would just go along, and I started to get like small payments for attending, but it was really sort of like a learning curve. And then, yeah, like I said, with Nigel, it became me going to cover, and then eventually it kind of progressed from there, where I would start advertising and get my own bookings. So
okay, that's really cool. So how did and we're going to circle back on the gigging thing in a minute,
yeah,
how did you end up getting the position at Alakazam the first time round? Like, was it a case of just walking into Alakazam and going, hey, Pete, give me a job? Or
so the first time, I was working at Boots, and there was indications that my job position probably wasn't going to be lasting very much longer, because of the way that the structuring kind of works within Boots. So on my days off, I would go to Pete's shop, you know, and he had picked up on the fact that this was going to be the case. Mm-hmm. And at the time, unbeknownst to me, was looking for a store manager. And then one of my friends, who had gone to the shop one day, had overheard this and said, why don't you speak to Andy? And then that kind of went from there. I went and did a day down there. And Peter and Jenny offered me the job, so I obviously accepted. I think it was a moment that lots of people would say was very fortuitous, and actually the second time was as well. But it was very fortuitous because actually I left. I gave my 2 weeks' notice. I left. I started working at Alakazam, and the department I was in was literally closed like a few days after that. So. Yeah. You know, it was, as fortune would have it fell in my favour. And yeah, I joined the Alakazam team at that point, which was me. It was Peter, obviously, Jenny. Jack was one of the guys that used to work there. And Chris Harding, I think, was working there still with us at the time. And Claire, who was kind of making up bits and pieces for us. I think she was working there at the time. So yeah, that was our team.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then you left?
I met Debbie, and the intention was to start a family. And so, you know, for me moving forward, I needed to have a look at other avenues to support us as a family moving forward. So yeah, broke my heart, but I did leave. And went and joined as a manager working for Allied Carpets. I started as an assistant manager and then was promoted to manager. And I was there for quite a few years. And then it kind of, that went into receivership. So I was suddenly now, what do I do about a job? Just as me and Debbie were getting married, it was like, I have no job here now. Not possibly the best move ever. So I started then working for a furniture company that we have here in Kent, which was really well known. And I was there with them for a number of years, managing their store over in Tunbridge Wells. I was working there. It was great. But you know, as a gigging magician, you always have this longing, if you're in something else, to want to be able to do magic,
yeah,
you know, in whatever form. And it was great, you know, a great company to work for. But that, again, was coming to the end of its life. And I was suddenly faced again within the space of like 3 years of not having a job again. And as it happened, Clive at the Card Collection, who I'm friends with, his son, Jamie, sent me a message and said, I'm going to Blackpool. Would you like to come and work on the stand? I was like, yeah, okay, I've got holiday, I'll come and work on the stand. So I went up to Blackpool, was speaking to them, and obviously speaking to Peter and Jenny as well. And then literally I went back to work after doing the Blackpool convention, and Peter phoned and said, how would you like to come and work for me again? I know that this is what's happening at the company that you're at. You know, this is what I'm happy to do. This is what we can offer. It was a no-brainer. You know, the thing is that I, having known Pete for as long as I've known him, I knew it was genuinely coming from the heart, you know, and it was, and I will always, and I'm not just saying this because I'm on camera, always being indebted to him for that moment, because it was literally a moment where I was there thinking, what am I going to do? There was going to be a huge pay cut if I moved back to another store. There's a possibility of redundancy. It was another one of those moments where literally he was there and he said, look, this is what we can do. So I did. And I've never looked back. And I'm so happy for that fact.
How many years ago was that, Andy?
That was, I think, 12 years ago now.
Wow.
Yeah. So a long, long time.
Well, let me ask you a question. I'm going to ask you more about Alakazam in a minute, but let me ask you a question. Obviously, you're a gigging magician as well.
Yeah.
Have you ever thought, you know, I'll do this magic thing full time? And there's a reason I ask this. I interviewed Graham Shaw from Magic Box.
Yeah.
Who obviously is the current children's entertainer or family entertainer of the year, very busy working pro up in Newcastle.
Yeah.
And I said to him, what advice would you give to somebody who wants to become a full-time magician? And he said, don't go full-time ever. He said, you know, I'm so lucky that I've got Magic Box that I work at, because I wouldn't want to just rely solely on being a professional magician.
Yeah.
Because it's a difficult industry, you know, even though I'm busy and I do illusion shows and, you know, and he kind of said that, which flies in the face to so many other people I've interviewed that go, I'm a full-time professional magician. I love it. I'm a full-time professional magician. I'd love to know your thought on this, because you have the skills, you have the chops, you have the ability to be a full-time pro, but you've always had that retail, whether it be with Alakazam or something else. Through your entire career, you've always had this retail background as well. So is Graham right, or?
If I was to say yes straight away, then yeah, I probably would agree with Graham from my point of view. Mm. However, I love gigging. I do truly love gigging when I go out and gig. I think it all comes down to balance for me. In a couple of different areas, when obviously you're exposed to magic all the time when you're in a magic shop, that is the job. You are exposed to magic all the time. So sometimes for me, if let's say I have a gig on a weekday, for me to kind of leave the shop and then go and do the gig, I might find a little bit draining, you know, and I might not be at my best, and I don't want that. And the same is true as if I've got a late gig the one night and then I'm going into work the next day, you know, I want to be my best there as well. So I think that kind of balance element is there. Also the kind of family life as well. You know, my family is still quite young in a lot of senses. You know, Noah has just turned 9, and you know, I obviously, like a lot of people, I enjoy spending time with family. So it for me, not going professional offers me that balance. It offers me the fact that I can kind of pick the gigs that I do, you know, without going, because I can appreciate it's going to be difficult for people that have magic as a full-time profession gigging wise, because you've always got to be, it doesn't just stop with you going to do a gig one night. You've got to sort out the invoice, and you've got to sort out the tax, you've got to, you know, advertise, you've got to do all the things that go with that. And although I do a small percentage of that, I don't think I would want to be doing that all the time, and stressing about the fact that I need to have X amount of work come in this week to be able to support the family. So it's kind of having that balance. To be perfectly honest, this last, since the first major easing of lockdown this year, I have been looking at ways to increase my gigging ratio. But that has been for me more of a focus on increasing it, but not necessarily working harder, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I go out and perform close-up magic. I love close-up magic, but my focus this last 4 months has been more on stand-up. So I'm not quite there yet, but for me, if I can maybe do one stand-up gig a week that pays me the same as doing two close-up gigs, then I'd rather go and do that, especially if it's maybe something where it's local. You know, so again, having that little bit of flexibility. I watched probably at the beginning of this, a wonderful lecture by Drew Bakenstos, and he kind of has, to me, the impression that I got was that he kind of has the same mentality. He has this, I can pick what I want to do, and it covers my needs, if that makes sense. Yeah, it covers my needs, and it's kind of working smarter rather than harder. So I've got myself into a bit more of that kind of mindset currently.
That's great. That's awesome. That's fantastic.
But I do still love the close-up. I will just add that in there. I still do.
Well, the other thing that Pete said to me is recently you've really been getting into mentalism as well.
Oh, just a small bit. Just a small bit. And the reason is because I'm finding mentalism fascinating just purely for... because it's something different. It's something that is not a card effect. You know, we look at card effects. You know, I've got tons of books on card magic up there. They're great. You know, there's lots of great magic in there, you know, that you watch on DVDs or you're reading books or you see other magicians do. And lots of other different types of magic that are equally as great. But I find with mentalism, because it's something that I've never really delved into that deeply before, now it's challenging me in other ways. So I'm kind of thinking now, how would I approach it this way for, let's say, a card trick, or let's say this effect here, and it's kind of made me it's kind of forced me to look at new avenues and new concepts, and I'm enjoying it just purely for that reason. I've spent an absolute fortune on stuff that I never would have bought before. I bought an easel the other day. I brought an easel to put a dry whiteboard on. Jamie Dawes, when I told him, Jamie Dawes was like, "That is so funny." I was like, "What's so funny about it?" I said, "You know, I'm going to use it. I will be using it." He's like, "No, it's just so funny that you're getting excited about an easel." And I'm like, "Yeah, no. I've got tons in the drawer down there. I've got like tons of billets that I've pre-folded that will last me probably like 2 years. But they're there, and I'm going to make a point of using them. So yeah, I'm just enjoying that sort of thing at the moment. But it's interesting because it kind of cross pollinates into other things that I've been doing, and I think, you know, that's all important as well. And I think that's a good thing about having a broad interest in lots of different facets of magic, is that it allows you to kind of borrow bits from other people, like kids entertainers. You know, I've never done a kids show in my life, but I watch children's entertainers and I think they're amazing. You know, I've got I've seen shows that, you know, parts of shows that you put up online. We've got a friend of ours called Jeff Lucas that did Noah, I think he did Noah's last his fourth or fifth birthday, and he was absolutely brilliant. You know, I've known Jeff for years. I've never seen him do a kid show, but when I saw that, I was just like, this is great. But there were little bits in there, you know, I'm sitting there analysing, going, oh, do you know what? That bit of time in there was just really good. Could I apply that to this? And then you do it and you go, why didn't I think of that before? You know, that's amazing. So I like that kind of cross-pollination. But yeah, mentalism is my bag at the moment, so to speak.
I know what you mean. I've always dabbled in mentalism, but I have to present it as mental right. magic because of my character, because of who I am.
Yeah.
I can't pull off the whole, like, gossip is the perfect example. You know, you could, I've seen Steve Deller do gossip and he does it as a full-on mentalism routine.
Yeah.
I couldn't do that. I have to just do it very tongue-in-cheek, jokey.
Yeah.
Really read minds, but baby gag, blah blah blah, yes. blah blah. Mm-hmm. I think it's important to know your character when you're doing mentalism and know what you can yeah. and can't get away with as a performer.
Yeah, my favorite unsung hero at the moment, because I think he's absolutely amazing, is Graham Jolly. I've again through working at Alakazam, I've known Graham and Lloyd for a number of years now, and it's just a shame that more people don't know about him. The public don't know about him. I think partly through his own choice, but you know, the stuff that he does is just brilliant. But yeah, again, you know, he knows his character. He knows the way that he wants to behave. I've watched recently Max Maven's DVDs, Kai Farbe, and you know, Max knows his character, and in the interviews, he says exactly how the character was developed and exactly why he chose that particular look. And, you know, I think not just in mentalism, there's kind of a way where you go, you know, if I'm going out and doing close up, I put on a suit, I go out and do it. And that's kind of it. But people do know character down. They do see the kind of character that you are. And, you know, of course, there's always that thing of it should be an extension of you, and it should be, you know, a reflection of you as a person, which is great advice. But you've got to kind of have the conviction and go, yeah, I'm going to take that on board, you know, not just go out and do it and just kind of wing it, you know, because you soon find out that if you do that, or you end up borrowing other people's characters that you've seen working, that it just doesn't work. You know, and I've been guilty of that. You know, I've kind of looked at other people performing and gone, I want to do that. And then I try it and I'm like, I'm never doing that again. Never doing that like that again.
Yeah.
You know, and kind of like finding your own voice. I think that's the important thing in anything, in any magic, certainly. So
that's fantastic. That's awesome. Well, let's talk a little bit about Alakazam, because obviously you say you've been there for the last 12 years.
Yeah.
And obviously you were there before that. I suppose the first question I've got to ask you, and this is a question that comes up on the channel over and over again.
Yeah.
How can somebody get on Alakazam's radar if they want to start releasing their own magic tricks? Like, you know, because there's a burning desire these days for new magicians to become famous. I want to be famous. I want to be a creator of magic and have my name in lights and blah, blah, blah. And I can become a millionaire releasing magic. So what advice would you give somebody who's wanting to start releasing magic? And, you know, how do they get onto Alakazam's radar?
So first and foremost, we have lots of different ways that we can be contacted about, you know, about new releases. So if you have an idea, you know, reach out and contact us. And, you know, the best way, obviously, is if you have an idea, then film it. It doesn't have to be cinema quality. We're not asking for like a Spielberg film or anything like that. It just need we just need to see the effect. We need to see the effect. Send it through to us on an email, and then we take a look at it. It's a very straightforward process. I think, you know, it's easy when you have an idea to say, oh, it does this and it does that, and it, you know, this is how you make it. You know, that's important. We need to know that. But initially, send us the idea. Just film it. Just film it on your phone. Send it through, and then we'll take a look at it. We, you know, the thing is that when we get projects come through, I quite often see them first. I see them first. I will pass them over to Peter, unless Peter obviously happens to see the email before me. Then I'll pass it over to Peter, or I'll show Harry, and then the three of us just sort of discuss it, and then we kind of move from there. But the process itself is very straightforward, in the sense of just send us over that video, and then we can see it. You know, like I said, we're not looking for cinema quality. We just need to see what the effect is. Some people prefer not to film it. You know, they might type something up and send it through. I would say that if you've got the opportunity to film it, that's the best way, because then we can just see it. We don't even need it seeing, you know, performed in front of people. We just need to see what the effect is. And then we kind of go from there. I try as much as possible because obviously we do get a lot of submissions come through, and occasionally we will get those items that come through and they may be similar to something else. So we try and, you know, stop it at that point if we can, because there's no point us saying, oh yeah, that's great, and then finding out X amount of time down the line. So we do our homework about stuff. And if I don't know, then Peter or Harry, or, you know, there are resources where we can find out about stuff. But yeah, I would just say that take the leap and send us through. Nothing that you send through, we're going to go, oh, yeah, that's just rubbish. You know, we will look at everything. We do look at everything. And we have that process. And then as the process goes through, we just contact you between us, and then hopefully bring it to market.
And is there any advice that you can give people on how to make a successful trick? Because you've seen millions of tricks, not just the ones that Alakazam have produced themselves, but, you know, every day there's new tricks being released that are coming into Alakazam, and, you know, your part of your job is to look at all of this stuff and advise your customers on whether it's any good for them or not.
Yeah.
As somebody who's done that for so many years, is there any advice on how to make a successful trick?
Well, I think there's lots of components that go into the successful trick. I mean, the effects obviously has got to be worth releasing, so that's a given. It's got to be easy for people, I think, to understand. You know, from an effect point of view, it's got to be easy for people to understand, I feel. From a purely marketing point of view, that's a given as well. And also generally, the method has to be fairly straightforward as well. If you've got a thing that requires you to, you know, do 10 complicated pieces of sleight of hand all in one quick move, it, you know, that's not to say it's going to be a bad trick, because it might be that it can be streamlined, but that's something that you've got to think about. You know, we do live in a world where magic, we would hope, is going to be push button, in the sense that they take out the packet. There's not going to be a lot of heavy reading or heavy doing of stuff, and then they'll be able to use it from there. That's not always the case, but, you know, if you kind of think about that sort of structure, then I think you're on to a good winner as well. Also, have a clear indication as to how you want that product to look. I mean, we do have, you know, a great designer. A Gower is a superb designer of packaging for magic, really very good, and other things as well. So the process, once it starts, will then be, you know, do you have an idea on that? Because you're not left out of that process. You know, if you say, oh, I don't like that color there, then we look at a different color. You know, if you don't like that font there, we can look at a different font. So you'll always be involved with that. But I think, you know, just having a clear perspective of about the workings of the trick, you know, and how that will come across to the people that you're selling to, you know, so they can use that, the look of the effect and the effect itself. I think, you know, you're onto a winner. And like clear instructions, that's always a sticking point, I think. I'm, you know, I've released a couple of products through Alakazam, and Peter always says to me, and I think it's a great advice, keep the instructions clear, you know, keep them succinct. You don't have to like go about explaining this in 50 words when you can explain it in 10, you know, try and keep it like that. And I think if you kind of bear those things in mind, you should be all right.
That's great. That's really good advice. And over the course of the years.
Yeah.
What's been your top three favorite Alakazam tricks?
Oh, so difficult. first and foremost, the Grail. Mm. I love the Grail. And ever since I first learned how to do it, I have done it. So, yeah, definitely that. I love Jim Critchlow's Till Death. It's a bit of a departure for me in all instances. But again, ever since I first picked it up and learned how to do it, I absolutely adore that. And yeah, so many. And Trilogy Extreme, I think is also one of my favorites. Again, that's been a routine that I in fact, I use Till Death and I use the Grail, but the one that I use more is Trilogy Extreme. But we, you know, it's hard to say because we have this commitment, or I you know, I love the effects that we release because they all kind of follow the same sort of pattern in the sense that, you know, the effect's strong, the method's direct, and, you know, it comes in great packaging. Although we take the packaging bit out, you know, those two kind of criteria are winners for me, I think. Mm. You know, especially something like Trilogy Extreme. I mean, when Trilogy first hit the market, that was crazy. You know, we couldn't believe it. You know, this effect does this. And then you find out the method and you're like, seriously, is that it? You know, not in the sense of, oh, is that it? It's kind of like, is that it? Wow. Yeah, people are going to love this. And they did. The Grail, such a strong effect. And then all, but, you know, such a direct method. Till Death, you can't get any directer than that. But the times that I've done it, you know, people just go crazy over it. Yeah, there are other favourites as well. The Killer Elite, I think, is a superb effect. I like the confusing coins, the hopping halves that we released. I think they're brilliant as well. And so many more. There's loads. All of the new releases are superb. You know, the Stebbins project we were talking about earlier on, I think is brilliant. So but they all follow that thread. And, you know, it may seem like I'm just saying, oh yeah, every Alakazam product is brilliant. But what you got to understand is that I think they're great for different reasons. You know, I see the effect and I see the directness of the method and I go, well, there's no reason why it wouldn't be a winner, you know? Yeah. So yeah, there's lots, but they're the three main ones.
Amazing. That's amazing. So one more question about Alakazam.
Yeah.
Obviously, you mentioned earlier on about all the different people you've worked with over the years, Chris Harding, yeah, blah, blah, blah. This, that. You're now currently working primarily with Harry.
Yeah.
Who is 21.
Yeah.
So when he came back to work at Alakazam, he was 8.
Yeah.
And now you guys are working together. How's it like working with Harry? Is he a bit?
Oh, it's great.
You can be honest. Is he a bit of a prima donna? Does he walk around with his shirt open, you know, like hair blowing in the wind?
Do you know what he does?
I'm the boy band of magic. You know, you can spill the beans now, Andy. You can tell the truth about him.
What he does is he taunts me every day about the lovely food that he's been having, that he has for lunch, and that he's going to have, and all these wonderful things. Harry's great. You know, it's good. We have a working relationship. Well, it's not even. It's just like a working friendship. It really is. It's really hard to sort of like put into words, because we just have banter during the day, you know. And I think the thing is that I learn a lot from Harry as well, because from a magician point of view, you know, Harry would be the first to admit that, you know, he's not been in magic very long. But, you know, he'll go and do a gig or do an effect, or he'll perform on a camera. And then he'll tell me about something, and I'll go, oh, yeah, that's really, really neat. And it's kind of like that fresh perspective from a fresh pair of eyes. And he's a great magician. You know, he is a great magician. And I think that's the key. You know, he's kind of a great magician, even though, like I said, he'll say that he's not been doing magic that long. And I do like the fact that we chat about magic from a fresh perspective. And, you know, like I said, we have banter, which is normally about food, to be fair, and about like other things. He has tried to tell me lots of times about football. I don't know anything about football. He's an avid Arsenal supporter, which is great, because you just see the enthusiasm there, and it's really good. But he does try and enlighten me about that. I don't think it's working. But I enjoy hearing about it as well, just because it's so enthusiastic. But he is a joy to work with. He really is.
That's cool. That's really good. Yeah, I think that I was saying to Peter again earlier on today that I think that the whole thing with Alakazam at the moment, and everybody there, and I'm including Jamie Dawes and Wayne Goodman in this. Yeah. You guys just seem to have it all together. It's good.
Yeah. Yeah, the thing is that the team, we all are heading in the same direction. I think that's the key. You know, part of the team dynamic is that you want people heading in the right direction or in the same direction. And although we may not always agree on stuff, you know, there's never any heavy disagreement. You know, it's always like, oh, what do you think of this box? What do you think of this design? Yeah, well, nah. Or what don't you like about it? And then it's, you know, it's conversational, and then we kind of digest it and talk about it, and then move on from there. You know, I'm no expert in design, but sometimes I do see stuff, and you know, I will say, I don't think that really works. The same as Peter might see something and go, oh, I don't know if that really works. You know, we're all singing from the same hymn sheet. I think that's the important thing. And we enjoy doing it at the same time. And again, you know, there's that kind of mutual respect for each other's opinions. You know, if I have an opinion about something, it's not dismissed. It's, you know, it's talked about. And then, you know, we kind of go from there. And we end up where we currently are ending up, with great products coming out. You know, and all the other things that we're doing, you know, like the lives and all of those sort of content related things that are working for us. So yeah, it works.
Yeah, you guys really are embracing social media, you know, with the lives, yeah. Live launches, and all the stuff that you've got going on. It's you don't see a lot of other companies that are doing the same thing. You know, it's good to see. It really is. Oh,
thank you. Well, we're enjoying doing it as well. So that's the important thing.
Well, let's very quickly. You mentioned earlier about a couple of your own products. You bought a couple of products yourself through Alakazam.
I did.
Can we talk about those a little bit?
We can. Yes. So most of the releases that I've done have been downloads in a couple of different areas. They were card magic ones. The first one was a download. I think it was the first one. It was something that I did. It was a variation on some of the card effects that were in the Bob Austin book. So I took something, a plot that he had in there, that I came up with different variations, and that was released as The Twins Legacy. I think that was the first proper release that I did. Then there were a couple other downloads that I kind of appeared on with variations on things. So they weren't separate releases as such. They were just variations on things. There was a couple of ideas, I think, that I put on the BitBook when that was re-released. Then we had a product called A Guaranteed Win, which was a physical product that was released. It's kind of weird to explain, but if you think kind of like a packet trick where cards all of one kind become a card that is chosen and then turn into a raw flush at the end, that was quite a neat thing that I was proud to kind of come up with. And then from there was a few more downloads. The downloads being, I did BK Aces, which was an ace assembly, and something called Double Vision, which is like a card splitting effect, which had their genesis about the same sort of time, because I love card assemblies. I love like the ace assemblies. I don't always agree with the kind of way that they're structured, but this was an ace assembly. The splitting effect was where a card split into aces, so they kind of complemented each other. And the other one that I did was something called Improvisio, which was myself, Dave, Harry, and a guy called Chris. We did Improvisio, which was a set of four effects that were in Proxy Magic. That was great. And there is a follow-up that I have been planning. It was great because the effect that I did on there, people were going crazy for. I did it on a vlog with Harry. It's where a pen wraps, it taps apparently of its own accord on the surface of a table or on whatever you put it on. So we filmed it and we used it as part of the effects that were on Improvisio. And then there are a couple of other ones that are planned.
That's always going to be my next question. Have you got other stuff coming out down the line?
Yeah, there are some. There's another packet trick which I'm still tweaking, which is like a family orientated card trick.
I think you showed me this last time I was in the shop.
I did. It involves aliens, which is all I'm going to leave it there. It just involves aliens. So but I'm still tweaking the handle on that because I think it can be refined a little bit. And there are a couple of other things as well. There's an ace cutting effect that I filmed as part of a lecture for Leo's Day at the beginning of the year, which I think is going to be the next one. So that's the spectator cuts the aces. And there's a couple of other coin ones as well. But yeah, they will come out eventually. It's just slotting in time and getting the filming done. Because we have lots of other great products as well that we're working on.
Right. Yeah, and I was going to ask you that. Can you give us a sneak peek? You don't have to say product, anything at all. Can you give us a sneak peek of anything coming out in the next couple of months, 2 or 3 months? I know Alakazam are always working on about 1,000 things at the same time.
Yeah, there is some stuff by Chris Congreve. I know that is going to be done. There's projects that I'm trying to keep a little bit more under wraps. But suffice to say that the projects that are being worked on that are going to be filmed over the next couple of weeks, you know, they're going to be amazing. There's so many great products that we're going to have coming out over this next 12 months. It's just going to be crazy. But I know that you guys are going to love them. I know that because I've seen the you know, from that stage of starting the effect, what the effect is for a start, and also the other kind of bonus ideas that have been thrown around for things as well. But yeah, kind of under the hat a little bit, but you just trust me, all right? Trust me that you're going to love them.
And I think that's the thing with both you and Alakazam. People do trust you. Like, Alakazam, I was saying this to... can't remember who I was speaking to. Some of the guys at Murphy's, actually. I was saying Alakazam have almost got their own little following. Like, they've got their own little subsection of the magic community that are just so, like, passionate about Alakazam. And, you know, they'll literally follow you guys to the end of the earth. And it's great that you've built up that, you know, that group of people that are just diehard supporters.
Yeah, I think, you know, we're all about community. We're about, like, the magic community. And we have customers that have been with us for years, you know. And the thing is that they're friends, you know. A lot of them are friends, you know, that when we speak to them, it's not just about speaking about what the newest item is on the shelf. It's hiya, you know, how's your dog? How's your wife? How, you know, what's the weather like? And so the conversation is far more than us trying to sell you stuff. It's about the people that are there. So
yeah, 100%.
Yeah, it's great. It, you know, and it is all about community. So,
well, here's one last question for you.
Okay,
which is, what's next for you, Andy? Like, do you have anything left on your magical bucket list that you haven't achieved? Are you wanting to, you know, you've mentioned doing more gigs and more stand-up.
Yeah.
Are there any goals you're wanting to hit yourself as a performer? Are there any goals that you're wanting to hit as a team member at Alakazam? What's coming up in the future? What would you like to see?
Well, happen? You know, from the shop point of view, you know, it's all about growth. We have very definite ideas about our growth moving forward. You know, you probably heard hints about the new website that we're working tirelessly on to bring to the community the early part of next year, all being well. So that is something that is being worked on, not just in work time. You know, it's being worked on outside of work time as well.
Yeah.
You know, it's so that is something that is very much happening behind the scenes, which again, you know, I know even from the early stages is going to be something that is going to be fantastic. So there's that, and obviously the new projects that are coming out. But it is, you know, for us about the growth and just growing our community even more. So that's exciting times for that, just in its own right. For me, it's about expanding my horizons. I think it's about, you know, trying to finesse stuff that I think I already know, you know, and kind of getting it down and doing more of the stand-up, certainly. You know, I'll be the first to admit that, you know, even though I go out and perform, I don't have an act. Even when I've done very limited amount of stand-up stuff, I have a structure, I think, but I don't necessarily have an act. And so for me, it will be more about tightening up the structure, about more making it an act, making it something that I'm going to be proud of. You know, I have lots of friends in the magic community that I trust with their opinions. You know, one thing that I'm certainly going to be very much using is the fact that Peter is a great director of magic. You know, you can approach him and say, this is the structure that I have. He's very good at saying, right, I think this would be better here. I think that can come out. So I will certainly be taking advantage of that, if you let me. But, you know, it's all about, I think, just putting together something like that, so I can say, right, go out there, do it, make it the best it possibly can be, and hopefully people will enjoy it. So, but that's kind of my aim.
That's perfect. That's absolutely perfect. You know what? You never fails to amaze me. You genuinely never fails to amaze me. It's true. It really is. Like, you've got so many skills. Like, you've got so many skills. And also, I can just tell that Alakazam would fall apart if you weren't there. Like, so, I remember when you had to go off work for a couple of weeks because of COVID, and Peter Harry, we're running around like blow-ass flies. I'm pretty sure of it. So, you know, it's you know, you've got so much that you've done, that you continue to do. And I'm so glad that you were able to make this interview. Before we wrap it up, I want to ask you one more question.
Okay.
One question that I get all the time on this channel, I can't think of many people who are more in a position to be able to answer this than you. A question that comes up all the time is reading books. Mm. Because you've got a big library, you're very well read. And a lot of people ask me this question on the channel and go, you know, I want to read a magic book. How do I read that magic book? Because I tried to start reading it from cover to cover, but I get bored and I end up putting it down. And so I try to pick out the tricks that work for me, but I end up getting overwhelmed. And I think a lot of people that call themselves visual learners, it's not that they're visual learners, it's just that they don't know how to read a magic book properly.
Yeah.
You got any advice on this?
I think the problem is that magic books are technical manuals. You know, if you had a Haynes manual put down in front of you, you wouldn't want to read that. You know, it's that's the thing. And it's the same with a magic book. They are, for 90% of them, technical manuals. I would say that if possible, the best way to read a magic book is to read it from, you know, don't dip into it. I think, you know, if you dip into it, you might be missing out. You might just see certain things and go and dismiss everything else. So I think the key is to try where you can to read it from the very beginning all the way through to the end. Read the introduction, read the acknowledgements beforehand, just read down the list of content. You know, I have just started reading My Myth and Magic. So, you know, now that's, you know, it's a big, thick book, right? Yeah. So I looked at the contents beforehand. And that actually was a book that I decided not to read from cover to cover, to just kind of dip in out. Prism, on the other hand, which is another recent edition, I read the contents and then I read the introduction to it, because it was written by Stephen Minch as like, this is what this was before. And then you read Max Maven's introduction and then you start reading through the effects. So that I'm going through bit by bit. Drew Bakkenstoss's book, I went through a trick, you know, from beginning to the end. But, you know, you can't necessarily do that with something like the Marlowe books. You know, you wouldn't necessarily pick up Revolutionary Card Technique and go, right, I'm going to read that from cover to cover, because that's more of a book where you would go, right, I need to learn how to do the immediate bottom deal. Right, it's on this page. Right, let's read through that, because there's not many tricks in there. There's no progression to it. So I think, you know, maybe decide on an individual basis how you're going to do that, but always try if you can to start at the beginning, unless it is something like Revolutionary Card Technique, because you're not going to really sort of like do that. Or you might, but it's highly unlikely. And then just try and make your way through it, because then you see the thought processes from the person that's written the book. In Drew Bakkenstoss's book, he has little bits of like information scattered throughout. And actually, if you don't kind of pay attention to that, if it comes up again later on and he's not really paid too much more attention to it, you might have missed an important piece of information. So in that sense, I would read it all the way through. But try not to think of them as technical books, unless they are something like I've just said there with the Marlowe ones. Just try and read them all the way through if you can, and try and get into the mindset of the people that are that have written the book.
That's brilliant advice. Amazing advice. Honestly, I hope that the people that have watched this have taken notes and listened to what you've said, because this has been an incredible interview. It really has.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. Well, they know if they have any questions, they can always reach out to me. You know, I'm on the emails. I go through the emails every day. We have the live chat. We have the telephone. You know, people that are friends on here, they can always message me through the Alakazam Facebook page, you know, and information will get to me. You know, people can reach out to me in lots of different ways.
That's great. That really is. And if people want to, obviously, Alakazam have two stores, don't they? They have an American store.
Yeah.
They have a UK store that covers the whole of Europe. So
yeah.
I'll put the links at the bottom, but it's www.alakazam.co.uk. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And alakazamusa.com, I believe.
That's the one. Yep.
There you go. And we've talked about all the different things that you do. Every Tuesday, is that when the live is?
Every Tuesday, yeah, there's a live 2 o'clock Facebook page or on the YouTube channel.
Why do we never see you on the live?
I have occasionally been on there. You know, they have that down, so that's good. Occasionally I do crop up on there. And I will be on there at Christmas, obviously, because I need to win my my bonus. So
And then the live launches normally take place once or twice a month, don't they?
Yeah, yeah. So the live launches are normally on a Wednesday or Thursday, I believe. But the best way to know of a live launch, subscribe to our newsletter. Just sign up on our website, and then all the updates go out from there. And obviously, they're mentioned on the live as well. So if you're after knowing when they're going to be, that's the best place to look.
And then one other thing that we should talk about is obviously the academies.
Yes.
Of course, yes. Alakazam pioneered this stuff. I mean, now we have the masterclasses with Vanishing Ink, and we have the Penguin Lives and the At the Table lectures. But Alakazam were one of the first people to jump on that. And
yeah. So the academies are great because, again, it's a communal thing. We had the intention that people should feel like the tutors are talking to them directly. You can watch from the comfort of your own home. There's no rigidity to it. It doesn't feel formalized in any way. Although the tutors generally have a set list, you know, that doesn't mean that they're going to stick to it rigidly. If you look at some of the academies in the past, for example, people like Mark Paul, Mark Spellman, yeah, and a couple of other people, John Carey, their academies have gone on for hours because they kind of deviated and stuff. But you know, you're not, when you pay for the academy, you're not paying any more because we add extra stuff in. You know, if you pay, I don't know, $49.99 for a 2-day course and it ends up being 10 hours long, then you know, and you think, oh, I'm only going to get like a couple of hours each night, then we're not going to go, oh well, actually you owe us for the other 6 hours. It doesn't work like that, you know, because it is all about the community. It's all about, you know, this value. And yeah, the tutors are great. You know, we've had lots of different diverse tutors talking about different subjects, imparting knowledge that they may not necessarily have done before. And yeah, it's really good, really good. And you know, from the experience of doing your last coin course with us, that people are there to ask questions, and you can kind of jazz a little bit. And, you know, and the people are reaching out to you directly, so you can directly answer them back and say, well, actually, and you go over stuff again. Mm. And it stays in their course for them to refer to at a later date as well. And the other thing is that there are multiple courses as well. Your coin course, for example, was great. We had a huge amount of people following that, and you've got your next one coming up this week. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be another influx of people, the people that are kind of following on the journey with you. So that's good as well. So yeah, they don't feel like they're having to do it on their own. They don't feel like, oh, I've learned the basics, where do I go from here? Because now they learned the basics, they attend your second course, they learn a little bit more advanced stuff, they attend the third course, learn a little bit more. And in between that, they're getting your little tips and ideas as well. So, you know, it builds up that kind of community element, but also the fact that they're not having to do it by themselves. You know, and if they come along to your course this week and say, I was on the last course, I had a question, then that's great. If they watched you just lecture, you know, once you're gone, unless they send you a message, that's kind of it, you know.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, or it could be. Whereas now they may have thought of something in the interim where they said, oh, I performed this from your first course, but I do have a question, in which case you can kind of answer it. But, you know, that's what we aim for, is the communal element, and it seems to be working, so.
And I'm going to put you on the spot again, very quickly, one last time. What are your top three favorite academies? Nobody, if people haven't seen an academy before, an Alakazam academy, and they're going to jump on and buy a couple of them, what are your top three?
Mark Poole's Acts of Mentalism,
mm-hmm.
Because it's absolutely chock full of amazing stuff. And this isn't just because you're on the other side here. Your coin course, like I said to you earlier on, you know, I think is amazing purely for a couple of different reasons. One, it's extremely well taught. Two, you learn some fantastic magic. And three, you progress through to the stuff you're doing in the other courses as well. So that gives people the opportunity to learn and grow. So I think that's really good. I couldn't single out one of them, but Mike Vincent's courses, because I think he's done a couple with them. Yeah, well, I think he's done a couple with us. You know, they're just, even if you just have Mike's courses in its own right, then you'd be set. Just so much knowledge in there. Will Houston's, I think, were great for similar sort of reasons. Mm-hmm. There's so many great ones. There really are. But this is the thing. They're for lots of different reasons. And this is what another offer is, that it just allows people such a diverse range of subjects to choose from. Don't just think, they're all card magic, because there may be like six or seven that are on card magic. However, they each offer you something different. So, you know, there's that as well. But yeah, there's lots of great choices. So I would recommend checking them out.
Amazing. Andy, like I say, this has been an incredible interview. Thank you so much for
filming. Oh, my pleasure.
You are the man. You are the heart and soul of Alakazam. I genuinely believe that. And also
an
incredible performer. And one of my personal goals one day is to see you perform live, because I've been told many times you are incredible. So I need to see this.
No pressure then.
No pressure. So I'm looking forward to seeing you. Like you said, I'm down at Alakazam next week. So it's going to be good to catch up in person, not over Zoom. But seriously, man, thank you so much. I'm going to put links down to your socials and Alakazam socials at the bottom. I encourage people to connect with you. If they email in the office, at the office, if they email in Alakazam, there's a very good chance it's going to be you replying to them.
Yeah, I'm sure it will be.
Yeah. So, thank you so much, Andy.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you very much for having me, Craig.
No problem. Guys, leave a comment down below for Andy. Let him know what you think. He will read these. And don't forget, I'm going to be back again tomorrow with another 3 videos. So I'll see you then. Andy, thank you very much. Guys, my name's Craig from Magic.
Thanks for listening to the Talk Magic Podcast.
Magic, magic.
Be sure to like and subscribe to the Magic TV YouTube channel.
Magic TV.
Which includes 14 unique videos every week. Whatever type of magic you're interested in, we've got you covered. Just search YouTube for Craig Petty's Magic TV, or click on the link in the description from this podcast below. Be sure to join us next Friday at 5 p.m. right here for another Talk Magic Podcast.